Hello, everyone, and welcome to our very special summer series of 2022, where we're re-releasing episodes curated by some of our friends and sponsors. So today I'm so excited to introduce you to Jordana Merkin from Voice for Good, who has picked the episode Leading with Nice with Matthew Ewell. So Jordana, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and why you picked this episode?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Cindy. It's great to be here. Big fan of you and your podcast. So I picked this episode because Matthew leads with his marketing communications background, which is, you know, what
our jam. Yeah.
And I do believe that, you know, strong communications is like a foundation for everything. And really that marketing is, everything is marketing. So, and I try to really impart that to my clients and, you know, all the organizations that I work with. So he had me at that. And then I just really loved his whole message about how to really be a leader, how to lead with nice, right? I love that that's his company name, Leading with Nice, and how important that is because, you know, I was an in-house marketer at various nonprofits for over a decade. And I think everyone's heart is in the right place at a nonprofit, but not everyone leads with nice. I think, you know, that's just not a given, unfortunately. So, you know, in title alone, I was really taken by that. And then I just really enjoyed his message.
Amazing. And I think so often we think of marketing as this like external exercise, right? We're talking outwards to our organization. But what you just described was also an internal process, right? It's how we take the marketing skills that we have and can develop and use that in relationships more broadly. And I mean, I'd love to hear from you about the process of going through marketing and what that does to teams.
I loved what he said about the check up versus the check in, you know, and I think that that's so true. I hadn't heard it phrased that way before, which I thought was brilliant, but I do think about like a similar, as you said, in terms of process, that it's more about, you know, it has to be more holistic than just the checklist of things that have to get done. And that's why I say like really everything is marketing, as you said, both internally and externally. And it does have to start from within. I talk a lot about storytelling with nonprofits and how that has to start from within also, and that the collection include everyone, and everyone really needs to have a sense, you know, whether you have a teeny tiny team, which is most of the organizations that I work with, but in-house I work with larger organizations as well. And really everyone has to have a sense of what that story is and how to tell that story and which stories are, you know, worth collecting. So yeah, it really does start within, and it's not just about checking the boxes in terms of like, you know, is this done? What, you know, what are the status of things, but more like, you know, holistically, how are things going? How can we, you know, work together as an organization? Because your supporters are going to feel that too. And, you know, it's important to start within, and it's going to, you know, ripple outward as well.
Amazing. So yeah, to our listeners, as you're listening, start to think about that intersection of marketing and internal communications and relationships. And I love your approach to that, Jordana, in picking this episode. Where can our listeners learn more about Voice for Good?
Yeah. So my website is voiceforgoodmarketing.com. I'm on Instagram at Voice for Good. I'm on LinkedIn at Jordana Merkin. And I'm happy to connect any of those.
Yeah. Thanks for supporting this summer series. And yeah, to our listeners, get ready to dive into this re-release of Leading with Nice. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and you're listening to the Small Nonprofit Podcast, where we bring you practical, down-to-earth advice on how to get more done for your small nonprofit. You are going to change the world, and we're here to help. Matthew, welcome to the podcast.
Oh my gosh, I've been so looking forward to speaking more with you. We've had a few conversations in the past, so this is great.
Yes, we have had lots of opportunities to chat. And I'm just laughing because we all have like stuff happening in the background. So we're just going to say we hear the dog, no big deal. This is life these days.
You wanted to know why he was left out of the bio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What? Yeah, I love it. We hear you, dog. We hear you. So yeah, I'm really excited for this conversation. When I first I think you connected with me and I thought, oh, I looked at your website because, you know, we all do online stalking. I was like, oh, I really like that you use sort of a scientifically backed process to help people understand the people around them as leaders and how to, you know, I would say step into the leaders we aspire to be. And so we're going to talk about that. And you call it nice leadership. So what does that mean?
Yeah, sure. You know, it really was born out of a conversation I had many years ago, probably in the mid 2000s. I did some journalism in addition, you know, today they'd call it a side hustle. Back then we just called it a part-time job. For a magazine I wrote for, I did a lot of the profiles. And somebody asked me like, hey, what makes a good, sometimes you're really excited about these leaders. Sometimes you're not. What is it? So I love data. So I kept a lot of like spreadsheets on the people I wrote about. And what I discovered is the ones that really amped me up were the ones that had really high aptitudes in one of six qualities. They showed a lot of gratitude, had a lot of empathy, had a lot of trust in both themselves and the people they worked with. They were honest, they were very generous with their time and money, and very service-driven. So, you know, from there, the next question was, are these just nice to have, or do they actually help the bottom line? Because clearly we all know, like you mentioned in the intro, we all know leaders who both make lots of money for a company and those who don't, and those who are very nice and also make lots of money. So what's the difference? Well, it turns out that people that have these qualities, there's lots of research out there that says, for example, bosses that show a lot of empathy, those employees will actually show up to work 30% more often. So they'll take less sick days, less, personal days, et cetera. And of course, the more often your employees are at work, the more productive they are, the more they can provide the bottom line. So there is actually data showing that if you have these qualities, if you really build into them, you're going to make a lot more, money. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Or, because our audience is nonprofits, it's money, but money is like impact, right? Like as a fundraiser, I know we need money, but like ultimately what it comes down to is like better programs, better service, all of the things that are our North Stars, right? Like the things that we want to do in this world.
You know, I was thinking of, there's a nonprofit I've worked with that, they have a membership model so that they have a revenue source and they use that revenue to serve their mission. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, the front desk person just wasn't really fun to talk to. Not fun. That's the wrong one. They were very pleasant.
Yeah.
And then there was a change in leadership and a new front desk person took over and they were great. And I asked one of the long-term employees, what's the difference of the front desk? They're like, oh, the new director of guest relations just has a real aptitude for like listening and really caring, which is like, I would call that empathy. And, that front desk person is the main point of contact in renewing memberships. So come on, it is directly tied 1 to 2. And I remember talking to the board of directors and they're celebrating all this great programming that obviously had generated the more revenue. And I was like, no, I have an empathetic leader now in that position. That's all there is to it. And when they saw it, they're like, oh yeah, that's exactly what it is. So.
Sure. Oh, there's so many things I want to dive into. I wanted to go through the six attributes again, but before we do, you mentioned something, which is like, you sort of referred to that person answering the phones or at the desk as the leader as well. And I want to talk about what is a leader? Because we have a very hierarchical perspective on these things often, but that's, and I think I've had conversations on the podcast before about how we can all step into leadership. And so I'd love for you to weigh in on that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I say like leadership is just influence. So anybody, you know, you hear about like leading up and leading sideways and leading down. Well, that's basically like influencing. So that's all leadership really is influence, because I have yet to see a job description where the title is leader of this. Now you might see like manager of or director of or vice president. And in the job description, it will say you lead this department, but there's no job leadership, right? And actually, mm-hmm. I talked to my one son. He is not the loudest. He's definitely social and an extrovert, but he's not, the front of the pack often. But it was funny. One day his friends were all over here and they were probably like 15 at the time. And they wanted to go, they're having a sleepover and they wanted to go to the park at like 11 PM. And I was like, I'm pretty sure like that would be bad parenting if I let them go. And so I said, hey boys, sorry. Like, you know, your friend Connor's got a strict dad. And they said, oh, you know what, Mr. Yule, Connor already said that, you know, we shouldn't even go. And he's always the one keeping us out of trouble. And I realized there. So after the next day, I said, Connor, like when they said that, that is them talking of your leadership. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? It was their idea. They wanted to go. I said, but look at how you influenced them even before they asked me. And I said, that's leadership in a nutshell. And so we have a lot of conversations in our house about influencing and how we can, you know, through our actions, can show leadership. And that's nice leadership. Nothing in there. You notice that there's nothing in there about like implements great programs or, you know, has a three-step process. No, it's all about your aptitudes, your actions.
Yeah. Okay. Side conversation. How did you raise a kid to be so responsible? But that's another time.
Sheltering. I don't want that. Only kidding. Kidding.
So let's talk about this. You've said to me previously, like basically what we're doing is learning how to increase our empathy. And that is sort of, but talk me through how we can start this. Is it starting with the six attributes or is there another path? Do we assess where we're at?
We use a tool actually, a DISC assessment, but it's a bit more than just, if you're familiar with like a Myers-Briggs or StrengthsFinder, there's a bunch out there. We happen to use a tool, that we like, it's based in a lot of science. And when I first started looking for the right way to, so actually in the master's program, the question I had was, okay, now I know this is true, but can you teach somebody? Well, the answer was yes. And I was like, okay, well, where are the programs that I can learn that I can implement? Well, there weren't programs. And so I found this tool that does great assessments that gives you the feedback on where you need to train up. And so where we typically start is like seeing, well, where are there some deficits? Where are there some low hanging fruit that we can just do some simple exercises? And, you know, one of the greatest tricks, and, you know, this is where it starts getting, people think this is complicated, but it's really not. So for example, if you are trying to lose weight, often you can get apps, you can track your weight. Right, but there are not as many apps where you can track your hours exercised and your calories input, right? And so your weight loss, that's a lag indicator, right? That tells you how you're doing. A lead indicator are the calories and the hours exercised. So I would say start creating a scorecard for yourself with some lead indicators. So for example, empathy, and people are going to say, you charge for this? And I'm like, yeah, people actually will pay money because it's so important. One simple thing is, keep a scorecard of like how often you asked your reports how their weekend was, right? Start keeping a scorecard of how often you put yourself in a situation that you're not familiar. So that could be trying new food at a restaurant, something you'd never ordered before. One thing I like to do when I work with faith-based organizations is I encourage them to attend a faith ceremony that's not their own. And just, you know, stepping into others' shoes. And the reason why this sounds so out of left field is that we're not talking about customer service training, right? We're not talking about, okay, I'm going to teach you how to use Excel better or something. I wish it was as easy as teaching Excel better, because there have people that just, they're not gifted in empathy. They just don't have it, right? And so people will say, well, how do we help this person do it? And I'm like, in that occasion, you probably need to find a job for them that does not need a lot of this, right? So, you know, there's a friend of mine, and he's a friend who works in insurance, and he's the guy that has to calculate how much of a financial risk it is. Like,
I just referenced insurance agents in a session. I was like, though, like, put your insurance agent hat on and be like the most ruthless, like, nitpicky, you know, because there's something about that job that just, well,
he's not an agent. He's the, I think it's called an actuary.
Yeah, like the back end where they're like, do you get money from us or not? Those people.
So he actually, when I bought a trampoline for my kids, he almost unfriended me. He's like, what are you doing? This is the biggest risk, you know, anyhow. So he would tell you he does not have a lot of strong empathy, but he's very generous with his time, right? He's very service driven, but like, he's just not the guy who's going to care if your weekend was good or not. So we talked a lot about empathy right now, but there's all these, there's five other attributes that make a nice leader. And usually I said most, like, the best leaders had three, right? So they're not busting out in all six. Oh my gosh, that would be, you know, that's that's near impossible. But anyhow.
So those qualities, let's go over those qualities again, because I think that they are worth talking a little about. Sure. So empathy is one.
Yeah. So I actually, the acronym I use in my own head is Get Hugs. Aww. So it's gratitude, empathy, trust, honesty, generosity, and service. So the U is a small U in this acronym. We'll throw an underwater, I guess. I don't know. make it work. And you know, gratitude, for example, I liken that to, like, if you want to know how to, the simplest form of doing gratitude is, I call it the check-in versus check-up. So if you have a report who's working on a project, often what we do is, like, we'll come by and be like, hey, are you done with that yet? Or how far along are you? That's checking up. And that's like a doctor's appointment. Nobody likes it. Mm-hmm. But instead, check in and be like, hey, how are things going? Is there anything I can help you with? That's actually showing gratitude and trust, because you're trusting the person, they're doing their job. And you're also acknowledging that they're working hard, and you recognize, like, hey, can I help you? Like, I get this is a job that might need an extra set of hands. That's a very simple way to show gratitude. Empathy, we talked about. Trust is, again, just, you know, I just talked to somebody this morning who teaches a small, medium business operating system. And he referenced the Marine Corps. So they have intent command, it's called. So the old way of doing military is, we gave you an order. Take that bunker, do it this way. Now it's about intent. So we talk about the outcome we want to achieve. And in between me telling you the outcome and achieving the outcome, I'm trusting you to choose the best way to forward.
Figure it out.
So, you know, are you giving orders to your staff, or are you giving intent? I tell my, when I work with graphic designers, I often will say, okay, here's what I want. Now, if I have a very specific idea in mind, I will show it to you. But at no point, if I have not done that, will I come and tell you, well, that's wrong, because I didn't, you know, I told you the intent was the outcome. So,
it reminds me of, like, loading the dishwasher, which I think in every household is, like, everyone thinks their way of loading the dishwasher is right. But at the end of the day, is the dishwasher loaded? Is it clean? Yeah.
I look at it like directions. How do you get somewhere? Like, why do you turn left here? Like, so I'm trying to get to Tim Hortons. Well, I usually go right. Okay. Tim Hortons at the end of this? You know, then we're good. We're good. You know, really a lot of it is about like releasing control. So, you know, you would know this, like I talk about generosity a lot with corporations who do, like, their, you know, donation day. I shouldn't say this one, 'cause my friend works there and he's like, oh, we need them. But, like, you know, say for example, you're building a family structure, and you get there's a nonprofit that does that. And your company comes for a day and they build a house. Or, like, another one, I worked at a food bank and people would always want to come with their company. Be like, well, like, we actually have a system already for delivering food, for building this. When you come, it actually takes away, it slows us down. So generosity, how can we be more generous in our work as opposed to just going out and doing volunteer work? Is generosity a matter of, you're putting aside an hour a month for each of your reports to do some mentoring, to do some talking, to go out for coffee and just ask how they're doing, to do a check-in? Is it a matter of, instead of saying, okay, the company is going to give a bunch of money to this nonprofit, just saying, what impacts you in your local neighborhood? Can we give $500 to that?
Yeah.
As opposed to anyhow. And then service driven obviously is just, if you lead to serve, you know, I would say bosses, their job is to serve their reports. Mm. So not them to serve you.
I love that. And often I think of like our, my job or the job that we do is to serve our clients, right? Yes. Like very, I love that word service because I think it is kind of like our reason for being for me a lot to help other people. Before we look at the other ones, I want to go back to the idea of releasing control. Because I think people have a hard time with that. And I think that is one of the areas where I'd love to hear how you can develop that, that muscle of letting go of like your way of doing things, my way of doing things.
You know, again, it goes to, so, okay, great question. And it's not as simple as like, oh, here you go. Here's your
come on. You can't fix us all in like a 30-minute conversation.
You know, one of the things that we learn when we do, we start off the assessments, one of the things we learn about is our communication styles, right? And so I think understanding how you like to be communicated to and how you personally communicate goes a long way in helping you release control. So for example, I worked for a boss that just wanted the bottom line first and then sometimes didn't even care about the details. But I wanted to walk in and tell her a story of how I ended up in the details because the journey for me was important. And for 15 years, she suffered of me and I did not get it. And then finally, I left that work and I've come back and I now do consulting for them. And now, since I left and realized that, now I cannot get over the compliments I get for my, you know, astute leadership. And I'm like, man, the only thing I've really done differently is now I just tell her the bottom line first. And so but that was me releasing control of how I wanted to communicate. So if you understand how you communicate and you understand how somebody else wants to be communicated to, that can actually be a big release of what would be control. Another example would be I'm very relational. So I love working in person. I want to come into your office and be like, hey, like, how was your weekend? And blah, blah, blah. Some people actually look at that as like, do you not trust me? Like, why are you checking? Why do you want to get so much into my business? We're not friends, we're colleagues, we're coworkers. And for me, I would say, well, my colleague, I should be friendly with, you know? So again, it's about understanding how people want to be interacted with, what motivates them, right? So what is motivating you to work here is different probably than what's motivating me to work here. Now, broadly, we may want to help that mission or cause. But I might be working here because I have a desire to grow my academia. I really want to learn about the sector. Where somebody else might be working there because they want to grow their status. They'd like to have it on their LinkedIn. That's not wrong. Again, it might be hard, easy to say, whoa, status, that's wrong and judgy. Okay, is it motivating them to get out of bed in the morning and come here and do an amazing job? Then you tell me it's wrong again. So
yeah. We haven't talked about honesty yet, and I'd love for you to tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, honesty first is about looking in the mirror. It is not about the freedom to say, I hate your work. You know, that is not what it is, right? So honesty is first about understanding your weaknesses. Right? That's the first thing to be honest with. And again, releasing control. So I just had a meeting with my own staff, and I said, I am not a great finisher. I'm a great starter. I can get a project ramped up. And when it starts to plateau, I lose interest. So I gave my two staff working on a project permission to not even ask me permission to make things happen at the end. Said, you know, if I come back in a week from now and you've told me about three things you've done to move the ball down the field and even across the finish line, you win. Like that is, you're the best employee. If you want to loop me in for sure. But if you are waiting for me to get back to you on an answer to this, I'm probably overwhelmed at my indecisiveness and I don't know how to communicate to you in that moment. So that's my weakness, owning it. And now fortunately I'm the boss, so I can, it's easier for me to say that, but you know, often when you are working if you're not the boss, it's okay for you to say to your boss, I need help in this arena. I will be the best employee ever in this arena. And if you allow that, can you also allow you to pay extra attention to maybe this detail piece that I'm not great at.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. The second piece, when it is, there's a great book called Crucial Conversations. And it's about, like, you know, one of the things we do really badly in North America is letting people go from our work, firing them and laying them off.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of South American countries, European countries, and Asian countries, there's a book called The Culture Code that talks about this. A lot of them, when somebody's been laid off, there's actually a very intentional, like, 6-month process of, like, checking in, going for dinner, seeing how they're doing, helping them network and resource for what's next. And so that's a bit of honesty as well too. So Crucial Conversations, check that out. Culture Code, check that out. But honesty starts with a look in the mirror, first of all. An honest, oh my gosh, which is tough, right?
Yeah. Well, so you said, I'm the boss, so it's easier for me to say, but I actually want to push on that, because I, in my experience, I think a lot of people have an expectation of, like, how they show up, or they're supposed to show up as a boss, and then they feel the deficits and try and hide them.
So maybe I said that because of my own context. The people calling me out. So I worked with a coach, Wendy Paul. She's amazing. WendyPauls.com. And she really helped me understand my inner critic.
Mm.
Right. So the self-saboteur, that person that lets in, like, we all have it, right? We all think we're not good enough in certain arenas.
Right. See, we all have an inner critic, but I feel like we have these expectations of what, like, a boss is, and like how we're supposed to be, or what a leader is. So how do we, like you mentioned earlier, the assessment, like if someone wanted to start to think about, like, okay, I almost feel like we start with honesty, and like, how do I get clear on looking at myself and looking at how I show up? How do we start that process?
Yeah. And this is why, like, in the great question, the reason I mentioned my communications and marketing background is often what prevents us from getting better at this is we don't know how to communicate.
Mm.
And before we can even talk about empathy, trust, gratitude, we need to understand how to communicate with each other. And that's really the first kind of the base, you know, the barrier to entry is, do you know how to communicate with each other? And it was so interesting. I was talking with my education and training coordinator about the assessments. And one of the great things, it has this like personalized high level kind of how to for employees. So the manager, when their team's done their assessments, they can just reference this like really quick kind of cue card cheat sheet of how to communicate, what's important, motivators, et cetera, et cetera. And that has really helped her team. The client we were talking about helped her team just get better at all the other things, because now they understand how to communicate with each other.
Mm.
And so honesty, yes, but I would actually say the biggest one is trust. Because trust is the one that allows me to screw up in a meeting and not worry that you're going to go back to your department or around the water cooler and talk about how dumb Matthew is, right? Because
I can't do that anymore.
No, you can still do it, but you're the outsider. Now you're going to be the one on the outside. Yeah, trust is actually the number one barrier. Honesty comes, you have to have trust before you can have honesty with each other. Honesty, personally, yes. But it doesn't help if I'm really honest with myself, which allows me to be honest with others. If you don't trust me, or I don't trust you.
Yeah. Yeah. So and I imagine they're all a little bit like they kind of operate.
Sure.
Like you can't, you said a good leader has three, but I think a culture needs to have a little bit of everything. Is that fair? Sure.
Yes, definitely. I mean, you cannot be absent of like gratitude. We have great honesty, trust, and we're service driven, but nobody here is appreciative of you.
I want to talk a little bit more about how to build trust, because I think that, and maybe this goes back to communicate, but it's hard. It's hard for people to show up trusting when that hasn't been our experience before.
Sure.
And I've seen that with people where even if they're in a new environment,
yes,
if they're, they, it becomes sort of embedded in like, oh, I don't trust people.
So there, you know, when I asked this question, I went looking for research, like, has anybody explored this before? And of course there is lots of it. And one study in particular that talked about trust, and it actually looked into empathy as well. Actually, it wasn't about either of these specifically, but the outcome was this. So it was a university in the Northeastern United States. And what they did is they hooked up this person to an fMRI. That's a functional MRI machine. So it shows what's actually happening in the brain. And what they would do is they had their friend watch, first they had the person on their own hooked up, and they would just give them a very small electric shock. And they saw the parts in the brain that lit up as they were being shocked. Then they unhooked them, and they brought their friend in, hooked their friend up. And as their friend was getting the same shocks, and they were both hooked up to the MRI, both brains would light up in the same spot, even though the first person was not being not shocked connected. Anymore. But they, it was their friend, they're being empathetic. Then they brought in a third person who neither of the friends knew, and they were unhooked from the machine. And the third person was hooked up, and they would get shocked. But the two friends, their brains didn't light up.
Oh, right?
So
interesting.
Why is that? Well, what... So that was the first study. The second study, which is separate than that, is they were trying to find how to unlock those endorphins that help us actually get into relationship, right? When we know each other, when you see your family or somebody you love, your brain starts to release endorphins that allows you to be more open, more honest, less defensive, et cetera. So they're trying to find out, how can we do this with strangers? Well, you know, in short, there's a lot, but there's these three questions that actually cause these endorphins to be released. And this is my super secret that you can do. This is usually the first thing I do with any new project. Here are the three questions. The first one is, what is your name, right? What's your name? So I'm Matthew Yule. That's the first one. The second question is, you know, where do you fall in, like, do you have siblings and where do you fall? What order do you fall in? And the third question is, what's one thing you loved doing as a kid? So those three questions are so simple, but asked together, actually start to release endorphins. And when we're in a group asking that, our brains will remember that. And so the next time I see you, the brain will start doing these endorphins. So how do these two things to go together? Well, the first so cool. study realized that the reason why their brains were not firing is because they didn't see this person as themselves or ourselves. I don't mean that as one word. I mean our self, our collective self. They didn't see that third person as ourself. If they had done those three questions before, they would have then seen this person in their sphere of life, right? So at work, one of the first things we do is share those questions are not at all like, you know, beyond the line, right? Like, what's your name? First of all, that's normal. Where do you fall in birth order?
Yeah.
That's pretty chill. And then what did you love doing as a kid? Come on. Like, that is, you know, that's enough. That's totally acceptable in the workplace today. And we can start to see our coworkers as part of ourself. So when we see that coworker having difficulty, when we're on a Zoom call, we kind of notice something is off. We are now a bit more apt to say to them, hey, you know, do you want to stop talking business for a second? Are you cool? How you doing? Like, do you need to take a break? Like, you know, there's been a few times I've been on with a client where you could tell something was off. Now, if I hadn't done this work with them, I might just keep on pressuring through. But because I had, I was able to say, like, hey, you know, do I take a break? And one time in particular, it was like, can we just, yes, 10 minutes. So I'm like, all right, see you in 10 minutes. And what had happened is their kids had to come home from school. And so, but they didn't feel that they could have just left the meeting that we had planned in advance to go get their kids from school. And I was like, are you kidding? Like, you know, my company's called Leading with Nice, right? Like, you can go get your kids from school because, like, there's been a COVID outbreak or something.
Yeah.
They didn't feel, think about if somebody working with me, with a company called Leading with Nice, didn't feel they could take a 10-minute break to go get their kids from school, what are your employees not telling you? And what are they suffering with? Right? Like, oh my golly, it was mind-bending that day.
Oh my goodness. I love that story. I also know we're running out of time, but I feel like that's such a perfect way to start to wrap up because it's simple, right? But it is. Yes. And I think that insight of like, seeing others as ours. As ourselves and as our people, right? Like, I hear that. Like, I hear people, oh, they're one of us, or they're one of our people. Yes. And what I love about this insight is that, like, you have three simple questions that turn a switch off in the brain or on in the brain that changes that.
And it's all science. So this is not like, this is not touchy feely, like, you know, like, it's scientific. This is all scientifically researched. These are people that went into a lab looking to maybe develop pharmaceuticals, and what they discovered is like, oh, we've actually discovered unlocked the key to empathy, like crazy. Right. So
bam. I love it. I mean, that's so cool. Matthew, where can our listeners connect with you? I know you do a lot of awesome things. Yep. So
thank you.
Tell them where they should reach out.
You know, like everybody else, I'm not sure if you've heard of the World Wide Web. I have a web page on the information superhighway. Leadingwithnice.com. We have a podcast as well, and we talk about often what I want to know is like leadership perspectives from where you sit. So, for example, we have an episode of the gentleman who was the accidental victim of a drive-by shooting. You're like, well, where's leadership in that? Well, we look at really his resiliency and how to get back to form. I just had this Joseph Michelli gentleman. He's an author. He has worked with Starbucks and Airbnb, and he talked a lot about building corporate culture. So that's a great resource if you're into this kind of thing. And yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Cindy, my pleasure.
Of course, to our listeners, thank you for joining us. As always, thanks for the amazing work that you do, and we'll see you next week.
Well, listen, I have one last thing. If you like this conversation, could you please give Cindy's podcast a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify? It really helps the algorithm know that people appreciate this podcast. And if you're listening to this regularly, clearly you value it. And so it's something you can do. It's free. It costs you 5 seconds. Give her a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to. And it will really help other people benefit from the message she's sharing. You'd be doing me a favor too, because I'm a big fan of Cindy's work as well too.
Thank you.
No problem. Have a good day, everybody.
Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.